that I could get down. And that very first night, I went through all of the full-blown stages of alcoholism. You know, I got drunk, got into a fight, went to a dance, danced even though I didn't know how, vomited on myself, or at least somebody did, and... and woke up the next morning thinking, I have found the magic elixir. The philosopher's stone that is going to turn this worldly lead into gold. And I proceeded from that point on to drink as much as I could, as often as I could. It wasn't because I didn't know about AA. I read the AA book before I was 21. And I'd already only been arrested once, but I was visiting friends, and they knew that I was a man of a great social conscience, and so they used to get out books for me to read when I was there, and one of them was the AA book in the old red and yellow cover, the most flamboyant thing. I mean, as soon as I saw it, I put my hand over it. I thought, oh, nobody sees that. But I read it, and it changed my drinking, because I didn't know up until that point that I drank differently than other people. I mean, how do you know that you drink differently than other people when if you're an alcoholic, and our general experience frequently is that we are the ones who drive everybody else home. You know, we can hold our liquor. Those dumb non-alcoholics, they can't. They're the kind, you know, that sit and they put a lampshade on their head at a party. You know, they're not ashamed of admitting it's affecting them. The alcoholic doesn't do that. He's sitting in the corner quietly. He knows where his drink is and how much is in it. He knows where your drink is and how much is in it. He's going to drive everybody else home, clucking at their lack of ability, and then stay drunk secretly for 3 days. You know, at the height of my drinking, I learned to hide. I became a Dick Smith at that point. You might run out of liquor, but I didn't. I had my own jug at all times. Hung up my own coat at parties for fear the host might not know the balance. And rip, you know, slip in the closet occasionally for a little drink. I don't know whether you call that social drinking in the closet, but it worked. But I was not ready for the first step, even though I understood it. Because the first step doesn't say you admitted you're an alcoholic. It said you admit that you are powerless over alcohol. I was not powerless over alcohol. At that time, I could decide when I was going to start drinking and when I was going to come off of it. And if you can do that, you may waste a lot of time, money, get into some strange adventures, but you are not powerless. I might come out of court, you know, and the other attorney would say, gee, Don, we sure had a tough day. Why don't we stop and have a couple of beers? I'd say, well, let's see. No, I can't. Today is Tuesday. I have to be back in court on Thursday. You know, they look at you a little strangely, but if you can control your drinking to that extent, you are not powerless over alcohol. To be powerless is to be like a leaf that's wafted about by the wind, deposited where the wind would, having no choice in the matter. The one story that has kind of become almost a trademark with me, several people insisted I tell it or they weren't going to pay for the hotel room. But it is one. You see, up until the point of this story that I'm going to mention, I had always been able to rationalize the things that happened to me, because it's almost impossible to come into conflict with society without some other member of society being involved. Like, if he hadn't made a left turn, I wouldn't have hit him. Which is true, but if I hadn't been an unguided missile coming down the street, I might have noticed his intention a little earlier. Or if he hadn't said what he said about our president, I wouldn't have a broken nose. Which is true, but if I hadn't have been smashed, he might not have made such a smashing point either. But on this particular occasion that I will describe, where I got the insight, I should preface it by saying, I drank almost exclusively to relax. And on this occasion, I'd been relaxed pretty close to a week. And I awoke from a nightmarish, tormented dream. There were, it was almost, it was like Hades. There were, I could smell the fire and brimstone, and the imps of the perverse were jabbing me with pitchforks. And, you know, I staggered to my feet. I thought, what is wrong here? You know, something, I even thought for a moment I'd have something to do with drinking. But I looked around and saw such wasn't the case. I saw that I had passed, I had nodded off in the front room on the couch, my family having gone to wherever they used to go at night. And on the couch, there was emanating from a tiny hole a thin spire of smoke. And I then realized what had happened. I'd nodded off with either a cigarette in my mouth or my hand, and had fallen on the covering of this couch and burned its way through into the matting, into the tacking inside, where lacking oxygen to take flame, it just began, the embers just began to spread. And so I realized then that nothing wrong with my drinking, I'd just been barbecued. The whole couch was filled with embers. So I went into the kitchen, got a pitcher of water, came back and tried to pour it into that tiny hole. Created a rather spectacular cascade on the carpet, but beyond that, nothing. So I knew more dramatic measures were required. I went into the kitchen, came back with a butcher knife, slashed the couch open from one end to the other, spread it, exposing the coals, and then was able to